With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So here I am on Queen's Promenade in Margate, sunny Margate. It's a bank holiday Monday. It's all a bit sleepy at the moment. It's 9 a.m. So for this mission, the guest that I've chosen has asked me to meet me at the Walpole Bay Hotel at 9 a.m. and we're going for a swim in the sea. So we're going in a sea lido, which I think it's the North Sea, isn't it, on this coast near Margate. And it's Gemma Kearney who is coming to meet me. I've just nipped into the hotel. It's absolutely classic. It's like stepping back in time. There's the gentle kind of tinkle of china on cups and kids using the ancient elevator with those kind of old sliding doors. And it's, it's real step back in time. So I'm looking out at the sea. It's quite sunny, but there's a chilly wind. A guy just jumped into the Lido and got straight back out, effing and blinding. And, it looks quite cold. So let's see when Gemma turns up if I really have to go swimming this morning. So here we are, we're back in the room, and yes, Gemma did turn up and she did take me swimming, and yes, it was ruddy freezing. Hello Gemma, how you doing?
Hello Robbie, so nice to see you. I'm so happy to have you here in Margate as well, and I can't believe you swam.
Well, I was just saying, I mean, my sort of 24, 36 hours in Margate has been, it's like a carry-on film meets a sort of action-adventure, sort of 40 Towers. It's like absolutely everything thrown in there. This place is just absolutely crazy. I wanted to talk to you about festivals, but we've got to talk about Margate first because it's just like, it is a real one-of-a-kind place. How did you end up here?
All roads lead back to Margate. It's so weird. A good friend of mine, actually, a mutual friend of ours, Amy Zing, who was one of the founders of Sink the Pink, moved here, and it just completely captured me straight away for an imagination factor rather than just a, you know, very kind of shortly written base gentrification factor that's often written about Margate. It's not as simple as that. It's a magical space and it lets your dreams run wild, partly because the sky turns tutti frutti most of the year, so it sends you like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the sunsets here, if you haven't been to Margate, listeners, then you must make a trip here because it is unlike anywhere else I've been to, a total melting pot potpourri of just every type of person imaginable. And we're having a great time. So obviously we've come here to talk to Gemma about festivals, yeah, because that is what we do on the A to Z of festivals. We've robbed a bank. We're going to kick off with a couple of little true or falses just to kind of get us warmed up after our little sea swim. True or false, Margate is the new Shoreditch?
False. There's little elements because it's a bit gritty, and I've seen people here that I haven't seen for 10 years and used to see back in the day on Brick Lane. But the one thing that Shoreditch doesn't have is a massive, amazing beach.
That is true. Okay, your radio interviewing highlight of all time was recently interviewing Throbbing Gristle's Cozy Fanny Tutti about gardening tips.
Yes, very strange, right? I'm having a very surreal point in my career, which I'm loving.
You're a world-renowned expert on snakes.
Oh my God, I hate them. And I interviewed Kristin Hirsch from Throwing Muses recently for my series The Leisure Society, where we find out about people's pastimes and hobbies, and she loves snakes. So we went to the reptile house at Regent Park Zoo at 9 a.m. midweek and walked around talking about trauma and snakes. It was very weird, but very cool. And it was one of those ones that I didn't really know what had happened, except for the fact that I was in fear from these snakes and she loved them. So I listened back to the show and was like, oh, she's... I mean, I knew she was kind of amazing, but it was worth listening back to what she said because I kind of can't remember.
She was just so captivated and scared by the snakes.
Yeah.
Okay, keeping on the animal tip, you woke up this morning with a pigeon in your room.
Oh my goodness, I didn't want you to say that. But yeah, I basically just went to brush my teeth and the window was open and there was a pigeon in my room. Which is a disaster.
And we're hoping that when Gemma goes back to her flat in a little while, it will have left. So, we've sort of talked a little bit about Margate. Obviously, our personal sort of history goes back to Radio 1 and, you know, the festival coverage, you know, your Glastonbury coverage. I remember when I was at Radio 1 and broadcasting from the site, and I think it was the first year of the park, and you'd been sent up, am I imagining this, or you'd been sent up to the top of that tower with the rainbow sort of threads coming down from it, and were you filming or was that radio or TV?
I was filming. So I did 7 years of roving reporting for the BBC, like for the Glastonbury coverage, and it's only sort of stopped because I was like, I've seen every bit of Glastonbury, and maybe that this should be somebody else. But it was such a privilege because it made me fall in love with what I believe to be the godfather of festivals, because I had the luxury of going to all the nooks and crannies via my job being the person that takes you on that mad like journey and being like, I'm about to tightrope, I'm on the top of a rainbow tower. There's a wall of death here. I'm upside down. There's salsa dancing. There's some South American street art. And that, for me, just really tickled my fancy because I'm an eclectic person. And Glastonbury is more than the sort of backstage pictures that you see of people in Hunter Wellies. And it's more than the headliner. It's more than the controversy of Kanye, for example. You know, that year was just kind of ridiculous. Like, and I covered the fact that people were for and against, and it was kind of interesting politically. But Glastonbury just sets your mind on fire, and it's huge and ridiculous. But in some ways, I'm so impressed with what everybody that works on it does, because they do create an alternative life. So like, by the sort of fourth day, you're like, I could actually live like this.
Yeah, it's utopian, isn't it? I was going to ask you at some point later in the interview about what your favorite festival was, but I think you may have just answered it there.
I really love it. I've loved festival over the years. I've had magical moments at festival.
Look, this is not about me and festival. You don't need to say that. So but I agree. I mean, everyone that I've interviewed for this series so far, at some point we always come back to Glastonbury. And the good thing is, I don't think anyone hopefully listening will get bored of that either, whether they've been to Glastonbury or not, because it sort of holds this special place, doesn't it? And it's just like a sort of echelons above what the rest of us do. So I mean, I was going to ask you what your first festival experience was.
That's a good question. I think a proper festival, it was Glastonbury, and I managed to get a free ticket via a mate, and I was really optimistic. I'm an optimistic person, but I was like stupid, basically. I was about 20 and I had tiny little white popper boots on that I got from Lacoste. I was an assistant stylist at the time, living in East London, and I had managed to get these boots. And people were looking at me as I was walking towards the festival, literally like I was an idiot, and saying, those will get ruined. I was like, no, they won't. They're wiped clean. It's going to be fine. And like within 2 hours, I had to have plastic bags on my feet. And we walked in to Bjork on the pyramid stage, I think. And the sun was setting, and I couldn't actually believe it. I couldn't believe it that it was a real experience. I was like, wow, this is what my hippie friends have been going on about.
So you were one of those people that you occasionally see at festivals with a pair of plastic bags on their shoes that have chosen the wrong footwear.
It's happened to me, and I feel like I've bumped into many a one extra DJ at Glastonbury with a similar look.
Once when we booked Tim Westwood to play at Festival, and he refused to get out of his white shiny Range Rover because of his trainers, and it wasn't even a wet year, and it was just he didn't want to get them on the grass, let alone in some mud. So footwear and festivals.
Footwear and festivals is kind of it's an interesting one.
I mean, yeah, you just touched on your stylist thing, because obviously we're going to talk about festivals, but also, you know, yourself, and you know, you did actually not start out, but one of your jobs was as a stylist for bands, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I was young and dramatic, and I'd been at drama school, and I couldn't get any acting work, and I was like, what the hell am I gonna do? But I was like an excitable puppy, I think, for the kind of early noughties London, and I was living just off Brick Lane in a tiny flat. Like, I couldn't afford anything. I was a tequila girl for money. And
what's a tequila girl?
It sounds very dubious these days in the modern light, like this. I'm not that, like, but it was never seedy. I just sort of got paid to go out, really. I used to work in bars in central London with like a leather holster, and I wasn't in a bikini or anything like that, just as a disclaimer. I was in a dress.
It was a nice image for a while, but yeah. No, she was fully clothed.
Yeah, I was fully clothed, just because people were a bit like, what? And I had like, yeah, glasses attached to me, and then a bottle of tequila, and would sell shots to people.
Okay. I thought you were like a vodka jelly type person at festivals, like where you're just going around selling vodka jellies, but with tequila. But no, you were actually working in an establishment.
Yeah, but I mean, it was commission only, so I had to work pretty tough.
Wow. How much did you get if you sold a shot of tequila?
Well, I was a cowboy. so you got paid by the bottle. So you'd sell the bottle. So it's like it was hardcore. It was hard work. Yeah, yeah. But I actually did really well.
Yeah. Yeah. You had the gift of the gab.
Yeah, I used to call it magic love potion, and say that if you have a shot of the tequila, you'll have special loving for a year. And people would be like, oh, yeah. And I'd be like, yeah, can you believe it? People couldn't resist. £3.50, bang.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have got the gift of the gab, and you are infectious. We're both wetting ourselves laughing on this lovely hotel balcony already. But I mean, just back to sort of festivals, you know, and you talked just amazingly there about Glastonbury and all the magic of Glastonbury. You know, for me, the magic of festivals is the sort of escapism, the becoming someone else, leaving your kind of mundane rubbish at the door, you know, forgetting about your worries. You know, what is it for you about festivals that sort of ticks your box?
It's weird because I've gone a little bit long in the a little bit, not bored, but I feel like the saturation of this idea of a festival has become quite capitalist. So I'm a little bit more like, now at the idea of a festival, but I don't actually mean that, because when I think about it properly, by the way, we're sitting outside the hotel, which is why there's like noises of children and cars and stuff. Actually, when I'm now that I'm thinking about it and going and analysing my relationship with festivals, like, I love that sense of freedom. Like, I promote that in everyday life. I think it's funny that people feel like they can only get dressed up at festivals. Like, I want to get dressed up every day.
Yeah, so talk through today's outfit, because we're on it's a bank holiday Monday, so yeah, you could go a bit sort of outside the box, but you're not in a tracksuit.
No, I'm in a velvet jumpsuit, a leopard print cap, and some jelly shoes.
And it's a good look, ladies and gents. We are loving the look.
Anything goes in Margate, you're allowed. You're totally allowed. We're sort of always like not really clothed on the beach, and you just get used to just like making things work in a practical manner rather than a look. So you might as well be wild.
And there are some amazing antique and sort of vintage shops here, aren't there?
Yeah, there's amazing places. Honestly, this place never bores me. You find out something new historically or futuristically, like, or socially every day. Really, it's a mad, mad place. But going back to the styling thing, basically, I was a tequila girl, and I used to like clothes, and I used to where I'd go with my like 20, I'd have 20 quid in cash, right, that I would take down to Beyond Retro or the end of Cheshire Street and be like, what am I gonna wear today? And I'd spend hours mooching, listening to like jangly indie bands that they'd be playing on the speakers and choose my vintage dress for the day. And it was just my most fun thing to do. And this is before Instagram, you know, it wasn't to show off, it was just my actual pleasure. And then I thought to myself, I wonder if you can do this as a job, like just yeah. like shop. Yeah. And then I learned that styling is actually quite hard and you have to be quite like good methodically at stuff, which I wasn't so great at, but I had all the enthusiasm and I assisted a lot of great people. And I ended up working with my mates because we were just all out. So you'd be like at a party and I'd like have a chat with Florence, be like, how are things going? And she'd be like, yeah. And I'd just be like, do you want to do a shoot together? We were all, there was like a sort of beautiful halcyon haze around certain scenes in London at that time, because it wasn't self-conscious necessarily, because it was just like us lot like hanging out and supporting each other and going to different club nights and whatever and dancing.
How did it go from that into broadcasting, which obviously you're now doing, you know, TV, radio, yeah. documentaries, you know, really insightful stuff, and you know, you started on One Extra?
Yeah, so I started on One Extra with Trev, Uncle Trev. He hates it when I call him that, but Trevor Nelson.
He's too young to be an uncle.
He's not, you know.
I do know. I know his real age. It's quite shocking.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's absolutely amazing.
But Trevor, you look incredible.
He does. And he became my mentor. So I did this program called Pick Me MTV, which I did really begrudgingly because I didn't want to be part of a reality TV show, but I actually really needed a job. And the researchers kept being like, please come to do this show. And I got down to the final three to be an MTV newsreader. And I didn't get the job. Laura Whitmore did, who's now like a pretty big presenter. It's all right, we get on, it's all good. And partly I didn't get the job because Trevor just sort of was like, I think you're really special, but I cannot imagine you reading the news, even if it is MTV news. And I was like, it's all right. I didn't expect to get it anyway. And then one day he just called me. I remember it so specifically. It's really surreal. I was in my like little flat wondering what my next kind of weird job or scheme would be. And he was like, do you want to pilot for the One Extra Breakfast Show? And this is 11 years ago. And I was like, yeah. And the rest is kind of just there. Like, you know, I've had I would never have imagined my career over the past 10 years. And it makes me quite emotional because I had the best time. It's hard. It's been hardcore and really up and down. But like, I love broadcast. I love radio. I love communicating. I went to drama school kind of originally for a reason, I think, because I love people. And I, even the fashion stuff, it all kind of makes sense now. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And now I'm in a really interesting position because I'm not on a regular show, even though I've done many regular shows. So I'm sort of doing different projects, which I'm really proud of, like for Radio 4 and for 6, and I wrote a book, and it's been mad. Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Gemma's just tucking into her cheese scone and banana to warm up after our sub-Arctic swim. But we're here in Margate talking festivals. It's the A to Z of Festivals with Gemma Kearney and Rob DeBank. I was really captivated by when you were talking about Glastonbury earlier. And, you know, a lot of people obviously go to Glastonbury. Some just go to see the bands. Some people want to go and see the other side of it, you know, the alternative side. And you were saying, because I've seen a bit of that with what I did with Radio 1 there, you know, when you get taken through that velvet rope, through that sort of back door into the sort of secret world of Glastonbury. So tell us a bit more about some of those sort of bits that you saw that you got taken by either Emily or Michael, or, you know, backstage. And because the annoying thing is, you go to Glastonbury, you can go for 5 days and you can see, you know, just 10% of it. And so what are some of those bits that are so great?
So one of the features that I did for BBC Two really late at night really sticks with me as a very psychedelic experience. And this has nothing to do with ingesting anything. Like, I mean, just as a actual experience. And obviously I was doing, like, we were doing telly and it had all been, like, set up by researchers that they're saying there's this really weird thing that we're going to go and cover at around midnight. And I said, okay, cool, you know, so I'm preparing. But they couldn't quite explain what I was going to do. So I was just like, you know me, anything goes, just like, let's do this. And it was going to be a live link from Block 9. And it was only going to be 2 minutes long. And I was going to experience live theatre as I walked, like experiential theatre as I walked through what had been created as a block of flats, I think. And then I was going to end somewhere amazing.
And the block of flats, weirdly, looks a little bit like the block of flats in Margate. When you come out the station and there's this kind of Banksy kind of... My son, actually, he's only 12. He's like, Dad, this is like Dismalland. He's never even been to Dismalland. Yeah. And Block 9 at Glastonbury is a little bit like that, isn't it? For people listening that don't know what it is, it's incredibly architecturally built sort of buildings in the middle of a field in Somerset.
It's phenomenal, and it really sets a tone as well. We were talking about Glastonbury being utopian, but this, particularly at a certain time of night, is really dystopian. And actually, if I'm completely honest, I'm a bit of a pansy. Like, I'm quite a delicate flower, so it wouldn't necessarily be my place of choice necessarily if I was just out in the festival, because it really pushes you in a way. But to cover it for TV is an amazing privilege as a sort of broadcast journalist. So basically, I'm walking through this flat and, like, people are, like, shouting at me, and you're going into different rooms, but then there's different scenes, and there was all these amazing, like, women dressed in, like, African traditional dress, like, having a massive, really impassioned discussion with me. And I didn't even, like, know what was going on, because you're just sort of being led. You get into a fridge and my cameraman was literally, like, sort of manoeuvring around this space with me. It's live on the TV. You've got to kind of illustrate somehow, communicate what's going on, even though you don't know. And then you go down a slide at the end and you basically end up in a party. And it was like an indoor nightclub. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't even know what's going on, but this is kind of amazing. And it was, I think, if I remember rightly, it was Yumi Bum Bum Train, who are a really, like, cult-followed experiential theatre company that are known to really take you to another place. And they were there at Glastonbury at post-midnight doing this. And I just thought, wow, if you're somewhere in the UK, just, you know, in Brexit land. I mean, this is before Brexit, thank goodness. But, like, just... You know, if you're living somewhere quite conservatively, like, and then you are watching the TV because you wanted to see whoever the headliner was at Glastonbury, and then you suddenly see that you can walk through a fridge, like, this is going to bend your mind. And I love that.
Yeah. And so part of going to festivals as well is that sort of escapism, being able to do whatever you want to do. Did you ever feel sort of, God, I wish the cameras would go away and the film crew would just bugger off for a couple of hours and I could just really let loose. I mean, did it feel like a job or...?
Only like when I was like a lot younger, so I started doing it when I was like 23, and I did really want to do it all. Not that I didn't want to work, I love doing the. I really love my job when I love it, and, you know, if you've got the right team, and the Glastonbury thing is really special. And then, but just like when we'd finish, I'd be like, right now. And I do remember being led by a cloaked woman holding fire, like a fire thing, like a poi-esque thing or a lantern. And the loads, like we were trying to go to Shangri-La really late at night. This is off camera. And I was getting a bit claustrophobic. I was like, I don't really want to wait in these queues to get down Shangri-La. And actually, I've got to go to bed. I've got work tomorrow. So we started to, like, veer off from the crowds that were heading towards Shangri-La, me and my boyfriend at the time. And then we saw some people sort of slipping under a bush kind of thing. And I was like, they look like they've got a way out. So we, like, sort of, like, followed them. And then I realised that I was, like, with loads of people that I know, like Nick Grimshaw, and, like, I was like, what are you doing here? What? And everybody was just going under this bush or something and being led by this woman. We just basically get led to this pub. I don't even know where it was in Glastonbury. And the cloak gets taken off and it's Florence Welsh. And she jumps behind the bar and we just have a party.
And then you woke up from this mad psychedelic dream that you thought was actually real.
I mean, it was just like, oh, cool, we found a good spot then. You know, and that is what Glastonbury does. It just, you can, and also there's a holistic side, and that's something that I've started to enjoy and really hit a sweet spot with, I think, just in 2017. I had a completely different experience. I wasn't working. I did one link on BBC4 introducing the Jacksons, which just, like, I rang my dad straight away and just cried because it was really cool. And then the rest of it, I was there on a yellow double-decker open-top bus in the Green Futures Field. And really enjoying that, like, that, you know, the real sentiment of Glastonbury, the really, like, beautiful, healing side of Glastonbury.
Yeah, the roots, the earthy side that is always there at Glastonbury. So, and I mean, just going back to what you said when you said you've got a bit, you know, a bit long in the tooth for festivals, and you kind of detect that, you know, commercialism, and I mean, as a festival promoter, you know, it's a constant battle where you're riding this sort of tightrope of trying to make the festival work, you know, commercially, and that's not even making a profit, that's just to actually, you know, break even, and then, you know, sponsorship and, you know, partners and things that you might not want to do, and then, so it's kind of from behind it, I can sort of see that there's that struggle. But do you think the festival landscape in general is going too far that way? Do you think, you know, it's just creeping into everywhere?
I think one of the problems is how we document everything. Like, I really like podcasts, actually, because it's got this such an independent spirit. But I'm just really, like, bored of this kind of filtered lifestyle. And I think that that's projected it in many different ways. And I think festivals and the idea of festivals is that. It's like, I don't really know if you can call just literally putting a stage in your local park and filling it with rubbish and putting, you know, and having a stand where you can buy wings and everybody gets absolutely, like, wrecked on warm blue naan. Like, don't get me wrong, I've been there, I've done it. Like, I like a party. I really do. It's not me being anti-party. Or I just think, I don't know whether that's a gig. That's a Sunday party. Like,
yeah.
I don't know whether all of the festivals are festivals.
Yeah, I got quite snobby about that a few years ago when the day festivals started popping up, and you know, I was like, oh, we need to redefine it and actually have a definition of, like, you have to, you know, have a green field, you have to have camping, you know, it's, you know, it has to be at least 2 or 3 days long. But then I started a day festival and then I kind of called it a day festival and it was like completely out the window. So it's become blurred, hasn't it? You know, a village fete can be a festival these days and a film festival is like a festival, or a, you know, a vegetable growing festival is suddenly a music festival with a band in the corner. So it's a very, yeah, it's got blurred lines now.
I think it's the commercialisation that makes me feel a bit like exhausted when it just goes too far, you know. I think like a heart, a bit of individuality in like independence in some way, it doesn't have to be really kooky. Like, I'm a believer of inclusivity and accessibility, and I also am a believer that one of our biggest problems is classism. You know, we talk about isms a lot, but you know, so I want everyone to feel welcome. It's just this idea like that, like big corporate brands making like a lot of money without thinking about the soul behind stuff. And I'm also not anti-money. I just think I think capitalism can become really lazy, and I think people buy into that because they've seen an Instagram picture, and it's like that quick, it's like buying stuff online really quickly. Like, we're sort of living like that, and I think festivals have fallen foul of that in some ways. Not all, absolutely, and there's new stuff all the time, which is incredible, and then there's old stuff too. And obviously you've had such an like a sort of really big epic journey with festival as well, which is, you know, an example of like of how kind of searing it can be, really. Yeah. But yeah, I love festivals, and I like the idea of them. But, and you know, like, I love Edinburgh Festival. I go to that, and the Fringe Festival and the Book Festival.
That's not a festival. No, so...
It's interesting. Is it or not?
I'm joking. Yeah. Of course. I mean, yeah. Well, a festival, I suppose, is a gathering of people, you know, sharing stuff and having fun and education and all that. So it could be anything. So is there maybe a Gemstival or a Cairnestival in the wings where you're like, right, I know how to do this because these people are cocking up, I'm going to do it properly?
I mean, I'm in awe of you that you did that. I don't know if I could. I'm very in awe. I think about it sometimes because I get moments where I think to myself, I would love to bring people together in such a way, but as to whether I could pull it off, I don't know. But, and I do think of you, and I think, flipping heck, well done.
That's very kind. Let's sort of wrap this up before we perish of post swim cold. But I'm being a weed, aren't I?
No, you're not.
Gemma, by the way, goes swimming in this sort of seawater Lido every day of the year.
As much as I can. Yeah, I'm very busy, and I'm not always in Margate. But when I'm here, I see it from my bedroom. I see a giant swimming pool in the sea from my bedroom, and it just calls me in.
It is great. It's like a big sort of concrete granite wall around a big patch of sort of beach, isn't it? And then when the tide goes out, then you've still got this sweet seawater swimming pool there. So what's next in the land of Gemma? You've got Boom Shakalak Productions. You've got the Leisure Society. Is there a new series of that coming?
Yeah, so the Leisure Society is wrapping up, but you can listen to it all again online in its third series, and it's talking to different people. Yesterday we put out the Damon Albarn interview, which was interesting, and we're wrapping up with Zowie Ashton. So yeah, but like, subscribe to it online, etc. The Sound Odyssey, which I did for Radio 4, taking British artists to different parts of the world to collaborate and make music, that's coming back in September. And we've done our first trip. We took Kate Stables and This Is The Kit to Casablanca. And I'm going to Guyana with Loyal Kana next month.
Oh no, that I'm so jealous. The new Loyal Kana record is so good.
I know. Yeah. I'm absolutely pumped about that. And don't get me wrong, it sounds glamorous, but on BBC budgets, it is hardcore.
Two sleeping bags, you and Laurel Connor.
Pretty much. Boom Shakalaka, my production company, we're producing a show that's going to Edinburgh Festival with Brigitte Aphrodite, who I know has played Festival and Camp Festival. She's written a punk musical about a young girl who's an outsider and starts a band with the local parakeets and Thanet, and they change the world. So we're taking that up to Edinburgh, which is kind of, I don't know if we've officially announced that, but it'll be really amazing. And it's called Parakeet. You can't miss it, really, once you start to get sucked in. And
naturally, of course it is.
And I do want to take some time next year to write again, because I loved writing, and I have an idea for another book. But it will mean, like, actually not doing everything all the time. It will mean
Slowing down,
which is an interesting process to learn, but maybe it's part of growing up.
There's another whole podcast in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's slow down.
There you go, the pride of Birmingham and now Thanet. Thank you so much, Gemma Kearney.
Oh, what a pleasure. Lovely way to have a bank holiday Monday morning.
High five.
Yes, bravo.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.